Welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. This is episode number 85, and it was supposed to be an episode I did a little bit earlier with Jay Moyer, who is a contributor to the Rookie Scouting Portfolio site and a former high school coach of 7 years, does just absolutely fantastic work. We spent an hour talking about what type of insights can you glean from August football. Well, it didn't work out so well in terms of the recording. So I'm going to represent Jay and talk a little bit about some of the insights that he shared, as well as the ones that I did, and just do a solo cast so that we can get this out and kind of work out some of the technical glitches that we had here. So a lot of this stuff I'll credit to Jay as we go along. You can find Jay's work at Jay Moyer FB on Twitter. And of course, the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. So he makes excellent videos. So I wrote an article earlier this week about how to watch August football. And I broke it down into different tiers because one of the things that Jay and I both noticed is that when you get on social media and you read the news, you often see all this excitement and buzz about players. You know, making great catches, breaking tackles, you know, great footwork, you know, making big plays over and over and over again. And we talk often about in fantasy football about the steady drumbeat of good plays that are have some sort of correlation to these players actually ending up being good producers during the season. And I don't know if that's actually true. The more that I look at this, the steady drumbeat's good, and it usually has something underneath the surface in terms of when you're watching the tape and after practice and the way the coaches study it, that they're seeing the things that they need to see. That means that the player is going to be good. But it often means that what you see on the surface isn't enough. You know, when you're just a practice observer, as a beat writer or an analyst, or you're watching some video of one play or two plays, and you don't really have the knowledge of what the coaching staff's knowledge is, you may not be able to glean the insights that are going to be accurate there. So talk about what I mean. With most practices, you're going to start with drills, you know, and the drills are really just ways to warm up. They're like the ABCs and 1-2-3s of the language of football. And you're kind of reciting those, getting your body ready for a larger, deeper, and more complex conversation that you're going to have with your opposition or within your scheme or with the complexity of a play call. And so, you know, oftentimes you look at footwork drills or certain one-on-one release drills with receivers or just, you know, throwing routes and, you know, one-on-one situations or, you know, seven-on-seven situations. And you'll see oftentimes it's just about the basic movements, getting used to basic movements again, or getting your body ready for that. And if the players aren't performing those things well, then yes, those are red flags. But if they're performing them well and they're showing athletic ability and they're showing basic technical skill of how to catch the football and being able to make athletic adjustments, those are expected things. Those aren't things that you look at and praise, but we oftentimes see that type of praise. A good example of that is with a player that I really liked out of Northern Arizona, which is Emmanuel Butler, the wide receiver for the New Orleans Saints. And we're seeing lots of buzz about Emmanuel Butler, but getting a chance to watch a couple of videos with him, and I would say that those videos aren't good supporting examples of whether he's playing well or not. Now, Drew Brees and Sean Payton, them talking about Butler and what they like about him, and if they're watching, basing a lot of that also off of the tape that the coaches are watching, that will be a better supporting argument than actually some of the video I saw. And a good example Jay brought up one was of a fade route that was thrown against tight shut coverage, back shoulder to the left sideline, and Butler made the catch. You know, and Jay brought up that, listen, that was a good throw. That was a more impressive, the throw and the placement of the throw, than it was the catch. The catch was a supposed to. That's what you're supposed to do on that route. And I completely agree with that, because if Butler dropped that throw, then you start to wonder about, can he do the basic things that all receivers need to be able to do if you're going to play for the New Orleans Saints? And I think that, you know, part of that is that you need to see these examples. The other example I saw of Butler is him going over the middle in a wide open zone and making an extension, a full extension catch, going across the middle and extending his body with no defender around and making a diving play. Well, he did that in college all the time. You know, that was the strength of his game. So are you really gaining anything more out of that other than that he's comfortable doing what he's supposed to do and what his tape showed that he could do in a situation where there wasn't much challenge there from another defender and that there wasn't any real integration of skills that need to go into making that play? Because as Jay brought up, and what my article also brings up, is that when you move on from drills like that or basic, you know, light scrimmage type of activities, you move on to like heavier scrimmages, 11 on 11, and then into game situations. And you want to see more diagnosis. You want to understand that the player has a grasp of not only the physical, that he's athletic enough, that he can be physical, that he can deal with physical play, that he can diagnose the type of coverage and make the right route adjustment, but he also can deal with complex situations and communicate well and play consistently. And those aren't things you're just going to see from videos like that. You know, another example that we talked about is with certain types of scrimmage situations that, you know, even 7-on-7 or 11-on-11s, especially with running the ball. And Jay brought up a great point about a video he saw that was put on Twitter where the writer said, it's obvious from this video that David Montgomery is a terrific tackle breaker. And when you see the video, the video is of defensive players in kind of bump mode with the 11-on-11 scrimmage. Basically, they're told to reach or to give a shove and hit a defender with their hit a runner or ball carrier with their shoulder, but not bring the player to the ground. There's very little full on tackling, you know, on a practice by practice basis, maybe once a week. In the NFL because of the rules with the collective bargaining. So when you see a run with David Montgomery where he runs through two defensive linemen who just simply reach for him or bump him with their shoulder, that's not 100% effort. That's not even 50% effort, you know, from these defenders. So you're not going to gain a lot to determine how good of a tackle breaker David Montgomery is from that clip. Now, Jay and I both agree that he's excellent at breaking tackles, and you can see that from his Iowa State film in full action where guys are actually giving their all to make a tackle, and him breaking technically sound tackles is very impressive. But you're not seeing that in Bears camp right now. So if it were a different player, you know, somebody could make the argument and go, well, Matt's wrong because – David Montgomery, watch what David Montgomery did in, you know, say 2 months from now, and he's breaking tackles left and right and go, see, I told you, he's a great tackle breaker. Well, you're using the wrong analysis and wrong process to get the right result. So you might want to, you might say you were right in that instance, but you weren't going about it in the right way. The right way would be to look at the Iowa State tape and say, he's going to be able to break tackles in the NFL. What you're seeing right there should not be part of your process. And that's the difficulty here when we look at training camp, is that with drills where there's light tackling or drills where you're just looking at certain movements or small facets of the position in a vacuum, you're really just determining whether or not they can be consistent doing it. Because then you're going to ratchet it up another notch with the drills and then with the practices. And when you ratchet those things up, then the pressure gets ratcheted up as well. The internal pressure to perform with your peers, you know, or against your competition for a depth chart spot or with the coach evaluating you. And then when you get into a preseason game, then it's about remembering all the different assignments, dealing with the unknowns of the defense that's facing you and not people you've practiced against, you know, multiple times a day for several weeks. You know, so that's new. And then also the crowd, and then also moving on maybe into the regular season, if you make it that far, dealing with the fact that the pressure of now everything counts, this is going to determine the outcome of several of you, for you and your teammates, whether or not they're going to continue to get opportunities to play football in this league and support their families with the living that they've made thus far. And that pressure is huge. And that's often what impacts consistency of performance. And in practice, you get to see some level of consistency, but it's not with the level of complete diagnostic integrative play, execution that you're going to see in game scenarios. So, there's only so much you're going to get to see in that practice period. And so things that you can look for in practice, what's important about what you can look for and make good determinations of, they're going to be helpful to you when you're analyzing the progress of a player. Well, Jay pointed out one of the things is looking at what, through either your own notes, if you're scouting on your own, or if you have a trusted source for scouting, to look at those notes and compare them to what you're seeing in terms of visual evidence of practice. He gave Kelvin Harmon, the North Carolina State wide receiver, as a perfect example of that, because Jay talked about how he knew that Kelvin Harmon was very good at making contested catches, and that he was strong at being able to make plays in tight coverage where he could go up and win the ball in the air, and that like Larry Fitzgerald does something a little bit unusual where he goes against what the norms are for teaching technique against tight coverage, where, they say to extend fully for the ball. Well, Fitzgerald can do that and will do that. But oftentimes when he has the opportunity against tight coverage, he'll use his body to post up and keep his hands and arms tight to his frame. He still catches the ball with his hands, but as Jay notes, that he keeps his hands in there, that he's already secured the ball to his frame much quicker and the defender can't knock it out. And that a lot of the elite defenders in the NFL are really good at being able to knock the arms and hit the arms as the ball's making contact with the hands when the arms are extended and be able to pry that ball loose. And Fitzgerald has kind of adjusted his technique well that way. And he compared that to what Kelvin Harmon does well in the same way, even though it's at a college game and he wasn't comparing them one-to-one, just in this area of technique. But so he saw a lot of that in practice, and he said, that's fine, but it's not giving me anything new. I'm not looking at that and saying, see, he's going to be good because he's doing the same things in college that he did in the NFL, that he's doing the same things on the NFL practice field that he did in college. Now he's looking for, can he separate? Because that's the question mark about how he was used at North Carolina State is, can he truly separate from NFL cornerbacks? So one of the things that Jay saw that he thought was noteworthy was watching Kelvin Harmon be able to run a square out and separate against a man playing light press coverage. He wasn't heavily actively engaging with him, but he was playing tight man at the line. And Harmon was able to maintain separation throughout the route and gain on it as he made his break. And that was an encouraging sign for him, And I think that's a good example when you want to look for, encouraging signs that run counter to the scouting reports that you've either compiled or that you read and trust. And if you see that, then you're seeing signs of either growth or signs of things that are proving that they can do things that the people observing and writing these reports didn't have a chance to see, or maybe were flat out wrong, or that player has grown and developed since then. So you're just looking for those differences with that in mind. Other things we talked about is that some players just aren't good at practice. And he gave a good example of Jeff Garcia as a player who was known as a horrific practice player who didn't look good doing drills, but then he went out into the game and he made plays and he became a productive NFL starting quarterback, and had a long career as a result of that. Was he an all-star consistently? No, but he was a quality starting NFL quarterback for multiple seasons in the league, and he was someone that just wasn't a great practice player. So you got to keep that in mind at times too. And sometimes that also comes down to understanding how mistakes work in practice, because you look at a player like Tom Brady, and Tom Brady frequently makes mistakes in practice because he's trying to test the defense or test new looks in ways that gives him a chance to find solutions to issues that he's not familiar with. and he's using that practice time productively in that manner. Or you can look at a guy like Patrick Mahomes. You know, last year, everybody was worried about all the interceptions that he threw early on in training camp, and they were worried that that was what was going to be the case for him last year, you know, during the regular season. But when you look at Andy Reid and how Andy Reid worked with him, Andy Reid gave Patrick Mahomes enough room. He knew that Patrick Mahomes was an outside-the-box type of decision-maker in the same way that Baker Mayfield in a positive way was, in the same way John Elway in a positive way was, in the same way that Brett Favre in a positive way was. And it takes some time for outside-the-box decision-makers to understand where the boundaries are for what they can and cannot do, because it's more reliant on their athletic ability than it is on just technical process or conceptual process. You know, Tom Brady, it's more about, you know, looking for keys to the scheme and executing with this technique. And if it's not this, then it's this. If it's not this, then it's this. And it's all kind of planned out to the point where Brady has all these contingencies that aren't being made up on the fly, you know, in a way where some of these guys, you know, like a Russell Wilson or Patrick Mahomes, or even a you know, Mayfield, or even a Manziel in a bad example of that, who couldn't come past it because of his off-field stuff. But these are guys that need a little bit more room to explore where their athletic ability can be helpful and where it can be hurtful, because it changes once they get to the NFL. A guy like Marcus Mariota, I just profiled earlier this week in the RSP site, show the difference between he and Brady, where he still relies on his athletic ability to an extent where he doesn't understand his limitations yet. And in the pocket, he'll try to make he'll make one move and then to get away from pressure and then be able to make a play. But if he tries to make a second move, he doesn't have that skill. The vision isn't quite there. The change of direction ability isn't quite there. He's more straight line speed like. He's not like Wilson or Mahomes or Mayfield in that regard. So he may be equated that way because he's fast and because he's quick and that he has some mobility. But the integration of that athletic skill with the conceptual understanding of the game is not there for him as a quarterback beyond that first avoidance of defender in the pocket. And as a result, when he tries to do it a second or third, you know, usually a second instance, it's when he should have thrown the ball away the way Brady did. Brady understands his limitations, and he has a contingency for this is what I can get away with, and if it's not there, I throw it away. And when you look at a guy like Mariota and a guy like Winston, those are guys that think they have just enough athletic ability to do a little more, and they haven't, and they got away with it in the high school and college game. They haven't in the pro game, and as a result, they end up in a situation where they make more mistakes than they do efficient decisions. And that's been the barrier between them being good, the difference between them being competent to them being good or great on a consistent basis. So those are things that you're also looking for, is players understanding their limitations and making wiser decisions. And those are things that you're only going to start to see in preseason and regular season. And you've got to wait for that to happen in these scenarios. Oftentimes, you know, you're going to get a lot of great buzz from players, and people will talk about it as if it's unusual, but it happens every year. You know, Miles Sanders is a good example of a guy, Brandon Graham, you know, Pro Bowl caliber defensive end, talking about how good Miles Sanders, the running back, could be for the Eagles because he's big, because he's quick, because he's shifty, he has good vision, and those are really nice qualities, you know. But I remember, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, David Wilson, great athlete, terrific running back when he could hold on to the ball, do tremendous things with the ball in his hand. And in camp, the buzz was, this is different buzz than what you normally hear about players. This isn't your typical August buzz, because Justin Tuck says he could be really good. And Chase Blackburn says David Wilson reminds him of LaDainian Tomlinson. And, you know, he could have been that good. And the point that I made on Twitter that I think was misunderstood by a couple of people, most people got it, but a couple of people misunderstood it, was they thought that I was picking on David Wilson and saying that he wasn't a talented football player because of the buzz that he got and he didn't have a long career. Yes, I know David Wilson had had injuries, and he ended up deciding to leave football and pursue more of an Olympic path as a track athlete. I understand that. I also understand that he did, you know, as one of the posters tweeted that he broke a single game record in yards from scrimmage and that he was on the all rookie team. But the point I was making wasn't about his talent. He was a tremendous talent. It wasn't about what he did on the field. He'd had some awesome moments on the field. The point was that he didn't maximize his skill. As good as he did, as well as he performed, he could have been the starting running back. They drafted him in the first round to be the starter. He had enough moments in camp that looked promising that he might be able to take over as the starter, but he couldn't consistently put together the conceptual moments or maintain good ball security to prevent him from making mistakes. And when he made mistakes, he repeatedly got benched by Tom Coughlin. Because the point that Jay brought up very well in our conversation was that the coaches aren't just looking for flash plays. They're not looking, you know, it's nice to, he said, you know, it's nice to see a receiver make a one-handed grab or a runner break a, you know, make a sweet spin move or juke somebody out of their shoes or a quarterback to rifle a ball over the head of a defender while he's rolling away from a pass rusher. Those are heady plays and they're exciting to see. But at the end of the day, what you're looking for is on the tape after practice, were they assignment sound? Were they doing the little things technically that they needed to do that you could rely on them play after play after play? Because most players, once they get into a training camp and they're eligible to get into training camp, can make these types of impressive plays. But can they do it also when they have to be faced with conceptual and physical challenges that are combined as opposed to in a vacuum that practice often doesn't, you know, practice often puts them in a vacuum. So beat writers and analysts and fans, oftentimes they cheer about all these plays, but they don't think about the fact that, you know, Jay brought up Terrell Pryor as a good example. I'll bring up Paul Richardson as a good example. I love Paul Richardson as a player. You guys know that if you followed the RSP for any length of time. But you know, it was a couple years before he really started to emerge. And even before that, he was making plays against guys like Richard Sherman in practice. He could make athletic plays over him all day long. You could see that when you throw the ball at the grab for grabs for him, he was going to be able to win that ball, just like Terrell Pryor could do that when you throw the ball up for grabs with him. But the difference is sometimes these players are making these plays not because they're fade routes, but sometimes it's because it's a timing route and they're not quite where they're supposed to be. They didn't break soon enough. They broke too early. They had to turn around. They had to reach for the ball. They had to make some sort of adjustment that the quarterback threw the ball anyway because it was a drill. But in the real game situation, if it was Aaron Rodgers who basically says, hey, listen, if you're not on time, you're not open, and I need my receivers to get on time, I'm not throwing you the ball. He said that. You know, I remember him talking about that he was happy that finally Jordy Nelson was doing that years ago. He talked about Jordy Nelson being one of the guys that was on time for him when Nelson was a young receiver. Okay. Another example of that is a guy like Pryor who wasn't often on time and doing the things he needed to do. And Alex Smith wasn't going to target him in those situations. He doesn't throw the ball up for grabs that way. He was a cautious player, and he's looking for players to be where they're supposed to be, like most quarterbacks are instructed to do. So in practice, you'll throw it, but in the game, you won't. So what often happens is you get this misidentified false positive from training camp reports that say he's making great catches over people. Cortland Sutton making great catches. Terrell Pryor making great catches. Paul Richardson making awesome catches. Look at the athletic ability and ability to extend and to be able to turn away from the inaccurate pass when maybe that pass some of the time wasn't inaccurate. The route wasn't run well. And as a result of the route not run well, they had to make more impressive athletic plays than they should have that aren't going to be targeted to them during the game. So one of the things that Jay recommended that I thought was a really astute point for fantasy players is that if you know the player's limitations and you see that and you know their positives and you see them you know, making positive plays based on something they did that was a limitation, such as making a great adjustment on a football because they didn't run the right route, maybe that's time to trade that player away. That's exactly what Jay did with Terrell Pryor when he arrived in Washington and saw him doing that in practices. He traded him away and actually profited from it before the demise of that player's productivity occurred during the season because, again, he wasn't running great routes. So that's something that you can use as a, you know, a strategic point to, you know, to benefit from practices in a way that's counter to a lot of people do. Most people are trading for players due to practice buzz. There are times that you may want to trade away players due to practice buzz. For me, more than anything, whether, you know, instead of looking for that instant gratification of this player is doing well and it's going to correlate to the regular season, I strongly suggest you looking at things incrementally and understand that you're not getting the most you need to from drills and from practice and from some scrimmages. You're not getting all of that diagnostic element and integrative look and be seeing whether or not that they overcome mistakes and be able to rebound. You're going to see that more in game scenarios. You're going to see that more in preseason and only for brief periods of time. And if they don't get enough reps, you may not get a chance to see them show that emotional resiliency and ability to deal with pressure on the level that they needed to, you know, other than if they just hit the mark right away, you know, and only some players do that. So, you know, you may not be able, you know, people are like, well, I want answers now. I want to see Emmanuel Sanders. I want to hear people tell me that Emmanuel Sanders is a guy worth putting on my redraft roster, not just stash on my practice squad, on my dynasty roster. Well, to be honest with you, you're probably not going to get that. People are going to tell you that you can. And this is fantasy football website advertising season. I write for one. I love football guys. They do great work. But, you know, we're all marketing our product. We all tell you, you know, pick the right players. You know, we're going to help you draft the right players and win your league. Well, that's shorthand. That's kind of a shorthand marketing term. Yes, the draft is one of the most important things for fantasy leagues. That's where you're going to get most of your players. And if you pick most of them, you do a good job picking most of them, you're going to have a competitive team. But as I always talk about, even in from a fantasy sphere, it's also about good lineup decisions. It's also about waiver wire. It's also about trades. And you got to be good at all those things. And guess what makes you good at those things? Observing what happens on the field or making good analysis choices based on the regular season versus what you saw in the preseason. So all of this is incremental. You draft what you can based on what you, you know, the analysis that you do. And you use the preseason and the practices as a step in the right direction, but not as a definitive source. And if that turns out that the player doesn't turn out to be as good, and you can pinpoint why based on comparing the preseason of August to the regular season, you're going to be quicker to make those diagnoses than your peers. You're going to be able to pick players up on waivers who are not getting the buzz that that they deserve, or you're going to avoid players that are getting a lot of buzz who don't really deserve it. And that's going to help you have an edge. So it is about still observing things incrementally as much as trying to draw instant conclusions. But we're geared in such a media environment right now where, you know, I mean, look at the Mueller, his testifying in front of Congress, you know. Mueller is a guy who's, you know, kind of like me, you know, kind of monotone, isn't someone that, you know, is going to be, is, you know, trained in improvisational acting or, you know, a Toastmaster expert or whatever, you know, but he's a guy that did deep analysis. And whether, you know, we're not going to get into the meat of that, but the point that I'm making is that here's a guy that did this long investigation, was a, you know, an officer in the Marines, worked, you know, at high levels of investigation and prosecution, an expert at his craft. And he's testifying, and it seemed like there was much more attention paid by the media to how entertaining he was, you know, what his personality was like, what his voice sounded like. There was more about that than the actual content. You know, and when you look at, and the parallel I'm making here is that when you look at practices, we're often looking at guys making flash plays and we're judging them based on flash plays, but not on the substance that needs to be there. And as a result, again, it's about how entertaining these guys are for us. Because if they're entertaining, then they must be having a good practice, you know. And I don't think it's conscious that way, but it's kind of a subconscious thing that inadvertently happens, and it goes too far and mistakes are made because we're not judging really the depth of practice and getting into the nuance of that, because that's not as entertaining to read as this guy's making plays all over the field. He's making leaping catches and jumping over people and breaking tackles, you know, where as a when you actually look at it and understand it within the real context of what of the goods you're trying to get to make good actionable decisions, oftentimes that stuff's just fizz without substance. You know, so you've got to be careful about that. You know, so we've, you know, when you look at these players and you look at these situations, you know, again, it is about taking those incremental steps to examine how that works out. And that may not be as fun in terms of discovering talent, but at the same time, it is going to be a little bit more helpful for you as you go about, you know, learning the game and understanding the game and trying to analyze the game in terms of what we do. So, you know, I would say, you know, overall, if there's some things to glean that will be helpful from this in terms of what to look for, understand that drills are about, do the players understand the movements that the coaches want them to execute? If they don't, are they new drills for those players? When it comes, you know, when it comes to drills, understand that they're basic movements, that they are not, you know, they're not usually worked on in conjunction with making a diagnosis or working against a defender. And if they are, they're often not using some sort of read scenario, reading the field or reading the coverage and working with a quarterback in that way. All right. The other things that I would consider looking at is understanding that certain types of practices demand more or less physicality, and that the physicality factor is probably not going to happen very often in practice. So talking about that on a level of, you know, breaking tackles, showing strength, showing leverage, those things may not be as prevalent as the way people are talking about it. You're looking for basically, you know, what you want to look for is, are they executing the basic techniques that they're supposed to, and there's no real gaps in the fundamental areas of their game? If they show a gap, do they rebound quickly with the correct usage of technique and concept? And if they do, that's good. If they don't, that may be a bigger red flag about them not being ready just to do what's expected of them. And when you get into the scrimmages and the one and scrimmage situations against new teams that you haven't practiced a ton with every day, you know, maybe you practice with them for a week, can you see them overcome new problems and find solutions to new problems in ways where they're doing a little bit of reading and they're not just playing against a base defense that isn't designed to take away the offense? They're just trying to get their players, you know, working, and they're not trying to do any specific game planning. You know, are they getting a chance? Are you still seeing them though work through solutions to new defenses that do pose those problems to them? And that comes in normally in the preseason. Can they handle the pressure of each incremental climb upward towards playing with the second team, then the first team, then in scrimmages versus the first team, then in preseason versus the first team? Can they, if they get enough playing time on the field, do they show that they can overcome a mistake? Okay. Those are things that you want to look for. And what types of mistakes are heavier than others? Dropping a pass isn't as big of a deal as fumbling the football. You know, taking a sack may not be as big of a deal as throwing an interception. You know, making the wrong read may not be as big of a deal as getting tackled behind the line of scrimmage Or, you know, I'm trying to give certain examples. That's probably not a good example. But you see what I'm saying in terms of there's different tiers of weight that goes into this and how you determine the things that you need to determine. So, you know, hopefully that was helpful. I wish that I had a chance to, you know, display more of what Jay and I talked about. Hopefully I represented a lot of what he discussed well, as well as what, you know, some of the points that I raised that you can find it. How to watch August football at mattwaldmansrsp.com or mattwaldmansrsp.com. My site, you can also check out my YouTube channel, Matt Waldman's RSP Film Room. And of course, if you are new to this podcast, you know, I'll have Dwayne McFarland back on to do his projection series along with me. Once he comes back from vacation, we'll bring Jay back on. Hopefully we'll be able to get the audio situation straightened out so that we don't have any technical difficulties. Ross Cooper is coming up pretty soon, who is works in college football, who's a trainer, skills trainer, and he's going to talk to us a little bit more about skills and drills, and especially the training videos we often see on social media, and, you know, talk about the hype of those and where separating really the substance from the buzz in those areas as well. So once again, that we can make more accurate assessments when we're scouting football talent. So, you know, please, if you haven't rated and reviewed the RSP cast, I would definitely appreciate it. If you want to give me more extensive feedback that you prefer to give by email, you can contact me at mattwaldmansrsp@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening to everybody. You know, I really appreciate the readers and listeners that I have. And you guys have a good week.